please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? We'll call the meeting to order. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have the public comment period, and I have four requests. Request number one, Mr. Donoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council, of the Board Supervisor. I have two issues. One is the pellet plant. I don't know when it's going to be closed. My understanding was it's supposed to be this December. You heard anything?
Something wrong with your speaker.
Yeah.
It's coming bubbly.
Yeah, because I take a bath with bubbles today this morning. There? I have two issues, Mr. Chairman. One is the tallow plant. I want to know when it's going to be closed. So my understanding was supposed to be December 30. That's my understanding, few months ago. So I don't know when it's going to be publicly known this to be closed. The second issue, Mr. Chairman, you have a paper there, two pages, in regard to the immigration from the Senate that was passed and approved but not signed by the President. It was introduced by Senator McKay and Mr. Ted Kennedy. Last time I presented myself, I present the same issue, but this time I bring you the five or seven points that this suggestion for the pass to the law is required. I think this valley need to support or request to continue to support this pretend bill that's going to be presented again by Senator McKay and Senator Kennedy because of the vitality and the economic power that the agriculture have in this valley. I think it's important for us, the ramification and importance of this bill. I know that a lot of the farm workers, almost 90% are Mexican-American, and almost 60% are illegal or don't have documentation. The rest is residents born and live in this valley. But the charter of the farm workers is increasing because of the mobility of the different area that these workers are not going to allow to continue to be in Stanislaus County. A lot of the people moved to Oregon, Washington, and different states because of the different seasons, and the same time stay there. You know, come back to Stanislaus County. So the question is, what kind of program and what kind of the thing we have in this valley to continue, we have the manpower to support our agriculture, economic, in the valley. So I think with this bill, it's going to be necessary to approve or pass. So I'm requesting to the board to start to see what we can do. I'm going to prepare myself with a lot of the people in this valley, in this county, to have a petition to request to the board supervisor to request to Congressman Denny Cardoza to start to see what can be done. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have three requests to speak on item B12, which I'll set aside until we get to that item. But one I have has no designation on it, so I don't know what you want to speak on, but it's Robert Stanford. Morning.
I didn't see a place on there to write what the topic was. I spoke, I think it was about a week ago, to the city council, and Willow Bryant, who was, I think, standing in for the mayor that day, mm-hmm. he said that I should speak about the same thing with you. It would be more appropriate probably at this juncture.
Now I think we need to turn the speaker up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you can't hear me, huh?
I can barely hear it.
It's because of that sexy voice.
Step up. Okay. Well, put that sexy voice close to it. Yeah,
my 976 voice. And anyway, the first of all, I'd like to say something. I believe that you guys here are very special to our community. I think you're for the most, especially Mr. DeMartini over there, who's doing historic, making historic advances in our Crow's Landing district. It's just been absolutely wonderful. And the community is so appreciative of the work you guys do. And I just kind of wanted to say that. But my point of today is on marijuana cards, the prescription marijuana, I know that our hands might be tied on that. I didn't feel like I spoke up enough when that was coming before the city council. But you know, my experience being in more of our disparate areas, like in Airport, South Modesto, and Ceres, I see a lot of drug trade going on that just trickles down. And in many conversations I've had with police officers, they're very frantic about when we have these cards in place, it's not that the marijuana, you know, I don't know, but it's not that the marijuana is bad or that I want to relieve suffering. I understand all of that. You know, but it always comes back to me, the question is, you know, just like morphine, why can't you get it at the pharmacy? Why do you have to grow your own plants? I just don't, there's a lot of things I don't understand. I don't understand why federally it's wrong, but now we're being forced to do it anyway because state, I don't know. But our police force is already, you know, like I've said before, pushed to the limit most of the time. And there's so much abuse that goes on with these cards. Any law enforcement officer you talk to in the state can tell you the same thing. Most of the, you know, a lot of the busts they're making, they have cards, are either forged or they're expired or they're way over their limit. And it just feeds this drug cartel that's ripping apart our communities and trickles down to every fabric of our lives. It affects all of us. And so I know that our hands are probably tied, but I just wanted to make sure that my position on this was clear, that I think that whole system, there's something wrong. I mean, there's just a lot of contradictions. And it's, you know, our community shouldn't have to, you know, to bear the brunt of this. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your opinion. And I don't know that we've given up yet. I think we've... with the card issue, we joined the several other counties. The decision was adverse, but they intend to appeal that decision, so make it more in line with federal law. And it is, you're right, it is a mess one way or the other. You can get marijuana in drugstores by virtue of a doctor's prescription in the pill form, but the testimony that was ever given at any of these events was that the pill form just didn't seem to satisfy some of those people who thought that they had a cure or at least a treatment for pain from it. So it's not that it's not available. The doctor has to prescribe it. It is in pill form, but that doesn't satisfy the people. It's pill form. So in any event, the issue of cards, as far as I know, is not totally over. Is that correct? Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll turn to the consent. Is there anyone else who didn't fill a card out who's here to speak on any item that's not an agenda item? Then we'll turn to the consent calendar. Does anyone have any item they wish to have removed? And if not, we need a motion.
Also moved.
Second.
A motion is second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered. Turn next to item... B12.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Krasnick. I consider it an opportunity to be here today after being your relatively new Animal Services Director since June of this year. The item before you today is a review of over the past year of activity with the pet overpopulation ordinances that you passed in 2005. This ordinance is actually a relatively significant ordinance in the world of animal control and animal services. Relatively few agencies have taken this particular leap, and I think it's very positive what you have done here. As the director of only 6 months, obviously this was implemented by our staff, and they've dedicated themselves to this particular ordinance and making it successful. We'll share with you some of those successes and those challenges. In August of 2005, your board adopted an ordinance that was designed to address the serious issue of pet overpopulation that existed then and still exists today within the county. This ordinance is commonly referred to as the Pet Overpopulation Ordinance. The ordinance promotes the spay or neuter of dogs and cats as well as addresses the breeding of these animals. It does this through the motivation of greater dog license differentials for unaltered animals and breeding licenses known as litter permits within the ordinance. The pet overpopulation ordinance was a result of the interest in the pet overpopulation problem by groups such as the Coalition for Cats and Dogs, the Animal Services Auxiliary, many rescue organizations, and the Animal Advisory Committee, to name a few. The department patterned the ordinance after those of the City and County of Los Angeles, as well as other public entities that were looking for innovative ways of addressing the pet overpopulation problem. The key factors in implementing the pet overpopulation ordinance was board-approved staffing increases, which included enhancing the staffing of the license and education team, which provides house-to-house enforcement of the dog licensing program throughout the county. The addition of an animal services officer to enforce the litter permit provisions of the ordinance, and the addition of one support staff to process the added workload created by participation in the monthly skate clinics, license sales, and the processing of the litter permits. These components represent the greatest contributing factors to the success of the overpopulation ordinance.
Pet overpopulation.
I'm sorry. There it is. The pet overpopulation problem can be best described as simply the large numbers of animals the department is obligated to handle each year. The county has averaged over 18,000 dogs and cats annually that have had to be cared for and otherwise handled over the past 4 years. If you compare ourselves with other jurisdictions, our 76% euthanasia rate stacks up poorly to the 58% national average. Our greatest success was realized in the number of altered dogs licensed. I believe this criteria clearly can be attributed to the license differential component of the ordinance, which increased the dog license from $28 to $100 annually for an unaltered dog. This price incentive, in conjunction with the enhancements to the license and education team, resulted in more dogs being altered, thus achieving the desired results. The actual revenue generated by the ordinance can be misleading as a measure of success due to the license fee changes which are part of this ordinance. With an increase in the number of altered licenses issued going up, the revenue produced by each dog license is less by approximately two-thirds due to the reduced fee for altered dogs. A more accurate measure is the comparison of the number of licenses issued between the year prior to the ordinance's adoption and since, which resulted in approximately 1,000 more licenses issued for altered animals. The litter permit provision of the ordinance requires a person who either intentionally or otherwise allows their cat or dog to breed to pay a $100 permit fee, which entitles them to have a litter permit. A litter per year. This is in addition to the $100 license fee in the case of dogs. The objective of this permit system is to discourage unnecessary breeding while still allowing responsible breeding. The enforcement of this provision is critical to the success of the ordinance. Enforcement is provided by both the license and education team and the additional animal services officer funded by the ordinance and charged with the enforcement of this provision. 5 years ago, the county, with the support and cooperation of the local veterinarians, created the Stanislaus County Alternative to Euthanasia Program, known as the SCATE Program. This program has not only been successful in providing low-cost spay or neuter surgeries, it has provided a well-rounded animal care incentive program. For a $50 voucher, the program not only provides surgery of a client's cat or dog, but provides for a rabies vaccination, preventive health vaccination, a permanent ID in the form of a microchip, and in the case of a dog, a county dog license. This is one of the most proactive public animal care programs in the state, if not in the nation. The state SCATE program is an excellent complement to the pet overpopulation ordinance. The monthly clinics, sponsored by the department and the Northern San Joaquin Veterinary Medical Association, saw a tremendous increase in the popularity with the passage of the pet overpopulation ordinance. We experienced an 83% increase in the number of SCATE vouchers issued from the year prior to the ordinance's adoption. These low-cost spay and neuter vouchers resulted in approximately 1,000 more surgeries over the year prior to the ordinance. The results being exactly what was desired from the ordinance, less dogs and cats being born. As with any issue, the pet overpopulation has no magic bullet solution. Jurisdictions that have seen significant improvement in their pet overpopulation problem have incorporated several programs to address this problem. Programs such as humane education, public awareness programs, expanded foster care, and broader volunteer programs. All of these assist in accomplishing the desired results. It is the intention of the department to implement some or all of these programs as well-proven techniques in solving the pet overpopulation crisis. While the current ordinance provides a financial incentive to spay or neuter the pets of our communities, it is only that, an incentive. It is time to ask ourselves if simply trying to persuade is enough to correct this problem, a problem created by too many animals being bred. As with any serious problem, sometimes bold and aggressive steps are necessary to put a stop to what is causing the problem. I can think of few issues where we have the ability to change the status quo, as we do with this particular ordinance and enhancement of this ordinance. Taking these next steps in controlling the unnecessary breeding of dogs and cats is the only logical answer to the problem of pet overpopulation. It is the time for the county to come to grips with the reality of having to destroy over 70% of the cats and dogs entering its shelter and to work diligently in putting a stop to it. This next step will not stop responsible breeders of dogs and cats that hobbyists and professionals alike believe benefits a particular purebred animal. Nor will our next step impose unreasonable restrictions on animals in which the spay or neuter the animal would create a health risk or endanger any individual animal. The next step only addresses the problem of our inability to place the majority of the 13,000 plus dogs and cats being destroyed each year in good homes. The department is only capable of helping the community in accomplishing the board's goals. We are unable to solve these problems alone. We can take steps such as the recently approved expansion of the SCATE program, which will allow residents to acquire a SCATE vouchers any day of the week at the animal shelter or through the mail, rather than only the use of the monthly clinics. This program will begin in mid-December of this year. The department will be bringing to your board recommendations that include conversion of impound fees that will provide for the spay or neuter of their impounded animals rather than simply the payment of a fine to have their animal returned. There will be other programs implemented by the department that will focus on achieving your board's goals of reducing the intake of animals into the shelter. The results of the enhancement of the pet overpopulation ordinance has been proven to be successful where integrated with other programs. These successes take the form of reducing the animals being impounded and destroyed by the shelters. Long-range benefits can take the form of keeping capital facility costs down, as well as limiting the growth of staff. The mandatory spay and neuter exemptions are things with dogs and cats registered with notable breed organizations. As stated before, the recommendations for change do include reasonable exemptions. Dogs and cats whose veterinary verified health issues make spaying or neutering unsafe, law enforcement dogs, guide rescue, or other documented service dogs. Next slide. Dogs and cats under the care of recognized nonprofit animal welfare organizations, recognized animal rescue organizations, and dogs and cats, of course, in governmental agencies other than the county, such as City of Turlock and Oakdale. The unaltered animal certificate will assist in funding the SCAPE program and allow those not breeding each year to maintain their intact animals as a matter of compliance with the ordinance. There will be exemptions for the unaltered animal certificate as well. 501c3 organizations, dogs documented to be enrolled in guide and service and breeding programs, and animals again verified by the veterinarian to be incapable of breeding. The reasoning for this, an important change is in the litter permit elimination of the exemption for show dogs and cats. The reason for this is that though the majority of people who responsibly breed are not the problem, they cannot control those they sell their puppies and kittens to. Our shelter, as do all, see far too many purebred animals and those that have randomly bred. We know that these buyers are not always as responsible as the original breeder. They need to share in the cost that add to the problem of pet overpopulation. Though the pet overpopulation ordinance is only a year old, we have seen marked success. Altered animal license sales are up, intake of animals in our shelter has experienced a decline, and though euthanasia of dogs saw a slight increase, cat euthanasia did take a downturn. The department will continue to focus its efforts on the board's objectives of reducing the number of animals impounded while reducing euthanasia. We have laid out for you what the department believes would be the results of enhancing the pet overpopulation ordinance. It is our goal, with the help of these improvements in the ordinance, that within the next 5 years we can reduce euthanasia by 45% and up to 3 times that amount in 10 years, something that has been accomplished by at least 2 other agencies with such ordinances. It will take more than enhancements to the ordinance, however. It will take a commitment of all stakeholders, the department, your board, animal welfare groups, and most importantly, the community at large. The county must provide the leadership in this effort. Stanislaus County is unique among its peers in not having an active, sizable, nonprofit animal shelter within its borders. The county and its rescue organizations are the only sanctuaries to our community's pets. If a real difference is going to be made, it rests heavily upon what we do over the next year. It will require the department to build on its partnerships with organizations, others dedicated to the same goals as ours. It will be imperative that our staff, the Animal Advisory Committee, and others in the county family to work together in accomplishing the goals set down by your board. As a department that is a member of the Safe Community Priority Team, it is our belief that the pet overpopulation ordinance and any future enhancements to it will go far in addressing the board's priority of a safe community, a community that is not only safe for its human population, but its pet animals population. Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
I have some, Mr. Chairman. I made some notes after reading your report. I wasn't able to attend the last Animal Advisory Board meeting because I was at an Association for Counties meeting in Anaheim. One of the board members told me that this report that you had given them, they had no chance to review it or to to look at it at all until just before the meeting. Are you aware of that?
The full report, they did not. I had spoken with a couple of members, and primarily this was due to the fact that we were not asking of your board any changes to the ordinance at this particular juncture, and that based on the board's input, we will go back to the Animal Advisory Committee for any substantial changes and have them review those prior to coming back to your
board. Yeah, I would like to see that, because that particular board does advise this board, so there are comments that come out of that advisory board I would always listen to.
Correct.
Now they need a little bit of time to be able to review this type of report before they can make any responsible comments. I just had a few questions that really wasn't in your report. One of the things that I've noticed is the change is you're mentioning an outright prohibition of harboring unaltered animals as a possibility, mandating the spay and neuter of all dogs and cats. Is that the direction you plan to go in outside of a few exemptions?
With the exception of the exemptions, we're primarily talking about the pet animal that ends up in our shelter, the general companion animal. Yes, that is what we're looking at, is to have spay and neuter of those type of animals.
I mean, to mandate that is a substantial change from what we have in place today.
It is definitely a leap, and I did put a great deal of thought into this, but in all honesty, the true results that we have seen with these ordinances are taking those kind of leaps in our ordinances. We have seen in two counties in the state that have taken this leap over the last 10 years, significant reduction of the animals that actually come into the shelter. We see a significant reduction in euthanasia, as well as even the animals that are actually coming into the shelter already spay and neutered, which obviously is a cost saving to when we are able to place these animals. So this is another step towards our goal of reducing that euthanasia to the fact that we really only want to euthanize animals that are not healthy, behaviorally unsound, and those kind of issues, rather than simply we do not have enough room at the inn and the fact that we don't have enough good homes in the community.
Okay. Well, I just noticed that was a substantial change. I don't know. I'm a little wary of making changes that are going to be difficult or near impossible to enforce. If you mandate spay all animals spayed and neutered outside of these exemptions that you've given, are you going to be able to enforce an ordinance?
It has been proven that it is an enforceable ordinance over time. As with any ordinance involved with infraction, you know, it's not a silver bullet. It's not a magic bullet. It is a step in the right direction. With the use of our license and compliance team, we will able to work with these people. I mean, we have to be, you know, look at what the ordinance states. We have a $100 dog license for an unaltered animal. For $50, no longer do they have to pay $100, but they can go to $12 after that. We have an excellent program through the SCATE program that will really go far, much farther, I think, than even in these other counties, which do not have the advantage of this particular program. So I honestly believe in Stanislaus County, we have more of an opportunity of being successful with this ordinance as it is recommended or suggested to be looked at and enhanced than even in other organizations, because we have the advantage of the SCATE program, which is, you know, quite supported by the Animal Advisory Committee and other groups in the community.
Well, that's a good program. I take it that SCATE program is voluntary to the veterinarians. The way it works is they get a voucher, and then the veterinarian does not necessarily have to accept that voucher.
You're absolutely right. There are currently 18 veterinarians throughout Stanislaus County that do honor that in all the communities, from Riverbank to Patterson. All areas of the county have veterinarians that currently honor that program. And we hope that we can continue to work with the veterinarians on this program and even make it more successful for them.
Yeah, I asked when veterinarian, I have birds, so I asked if that animal in will come back someday and be a regular customer. So that's how he his justification for accepting the voucher. I had just a couple of more things. I noticed that you were talking about prohibiting advertising of the sale of animals, and I thought that's something new I'd not heard of before.
Actually, the current ordinance prohibits the advertising of animals if they do not display the litter permit. However, that is enforced by our officer actually calling through the newspapers and so forth. The Modesto Bee, we are working with on actually providing some paid advertisement on the fact in the future to be able to restrict that. But they are technically, by the current ordinance, without enhancements, to advertise within their ad their litter permit to be able to sell dogs and cats.
And how do you handle the pet stores that are selling kittens and puppies? Are they have to have a litter permit displayed? Because they generally buy them off somebody else.
The breeder, they are supposed to be acquiring these animals and have knowledge of who they're acquiring these animals from, and the person they acquire it from are to have the litter permit, not the actual pet store.
What's the pet store's requirement then, just to display the
Origin of the animals and the litter permit.
But the pet store doesn't pay the litter permit. They buy it off somebody.
Not unless they're actually involved in the actual breeding.
Okay. Have you ever thought about what you might do if people were to buy pets over the internet or from out of county to get around our litter permit?
The ordinance, as you're aware, is strictly within the borders of Stanislaus County to control that situation. No, we do not have the resources to control outside breeding through the internet or through other areas outside the county. Again, this is not a perfect solution. This is just working towards doing a better job and on the board's goals.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. In the skate program, what's the percentage of dogs versus cats of going through the skate program, roughly?
I would say currently, because we've only offered them through the clinic program, it's probably 99%, 99.5% dogs.
Okay.
And cats are the other 0.5 or 1%. The reason for it, and I've talked to citizens at the clinics for this very reason of the, people that have cats, and said they don't like to go to the clinics, to be bluntly honest with you, because if you've ever been to one of our clinics, we have sometimes as many as 350 dogs at one time, and bringing a cat into that environment, even in a carrier, is a significant problem to that cat owner, let alone to the stress on the cat. One of the plans the department has developed with the approval of the Animal Advisory Committee is we are going to start in mid-December the skate program where animals will not actually, they will actually take their animal to one of the participating vets for all the inoculation, for the microchipping, for the entire program. Thus, they will not have to stand in line with their cat and be able to do it. In fact, the actual kickoff will really be directed towards cats. And I'm sure as members of the board, some of your constituents have spoke to you about, one of the very large underlying problems this county is cats, the nuisance cats, feral cats, even pet cats in the neighborhood. And I don't believe the department has done enough in that particular area. And I hope that the skate program, especially being expanded for the cat owners and cat population, will help in that alleviate some of those problems.
And that's what I looked at, the number of dogs going through the skate program, seeing the reduction of dogs entering the shelter and thus the number of dogs being euthanized. How then can you explain the cat reduction of euthanasia? We're receiving less cats, and it's obviously not because of the skate program, because that's only 1%.
It's not because of the skate program, but I think it is partly due to the awareness of the pet overpopulation ordinance and people taking advantage of the fact that they, you know, should maintain their cats. There's other programs going on in that regards. I would not say the SCAPE program currently is having significant effect on the control of pets. But I have found in the number of years I've worked in this business that awareness goes a long way for people. You know, just making them think about, you know, keeping their animals at home, those kind of issues. And we have tried to educate through our officers as well as through the license compliance team to talk about cats, not just dogs. You know, the reason dogs get so much attention in the state of California is primarily based on the old food and agriculture code of livestock depredation, and then after that, the fact of rabies control, because state law requires vaccinations for dogs, but it doesn't for cats. It's an interesting question, and so, you know, the dogs really get more of the attention in this situation. However, and I've talked to other directors in other counties, other cities, cats are fast becoming the pet of choice because of size of homes, because of, you know, that kind of growth in that type situation. And the problem is, in this county in particular, in the rural communities, we're seeing more and more complaints about animals being dumped out in these communities. And, you know, it's the old story of the rancher wants this cat for a barn cat. Well, they don't already realize they have five or six cats and another one dumped from some citizen in a residential area is no help to that rancher. So we do have to do a better job of education. But I could only address the fact of our reduction in the cats is just really awareness on the public's parts. We've expanded our trapping program, meaning, you know, for citizens to provide, you know, cat traps for people and things like that. And as communities are aware of that, if you have a cat, as I do, you want to keep that cat at home and not end up in one of, you know, one of our traps.
I would agree with you that education is extremely important in this process. Do you know approximately how much money is in the SCAPE fund?
Linda, do you?
If not, you can get back to me on that. I'm just interested in that.
No, certainly can do that.
You noted that we have about 1,000 more licenses, but your license revenue is only up about $3,000, I assume, because a lot of people move from unaltered to altered.
That's exactly the reason for that.
Okay. Do you recall what the estimate was when we put this? I know you weren't here a year ago, but when we put this in, what the revenue increase was estimated to be?
The only thing I recall is that there was a requirement that the revenue pay for the additional staffing, which it has, and has left a balance for the SCAPE program. I honestly can't, I can get back to you on that, but I can't tell you
that. I'd like to see that as well as the number of fines and all the rest, because I know, I think this board authorized $128,000. That number sticks in my mind, $128,000. And I asked that on the fines because in today's Modesto B, there's 41 ads for dogs and cats, and there's 11 of them with permit numbers. 30 of them do not. So does that mean 30 people are going to receive citations?
That is what should be occurring. Right at this juncture, we are having a staffing issue, so we don't have an officer currently assigned directly, but that will be corrected within the month. But that's exactly what that animal services officer assigned to the SCAPE program does, is go through the newspaper after those 33 people that haven't shown that, and find out if they have a litter permit or visit them to ensure that it is complied with.
If you could get those numbers for me, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
Fines, total revenue versus expense.
Not a problem.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? Before we go to a motion, we have three people who wish to speak on this. I'll call on Susan Robinson.
Good morning, Susan Robinson, President Coalition for Cats and Dogs, and we support these proposed changes to the ordinance. It will make it more effective, we'll reach goals faster, and I think it will be easier to administer as well. Right now, there's too many choices for people to make, and if you adopt these proposed changes, people will have fewer choices, and it'll be much easier to administer that way. It will also increase the value of the animals in the long run, and this will result in something that I call the panda effect. The less numerous a certain particular breed of animal or species of animal is, the more willing people are to spend money on them and to care for them better. Huge amounts of money are spent on pandas because they are so rare, And right now, at least with cats, cats are considered to be almost disposable, almost like vermin, because there are so many of them. So I think this will benefit not only the community in terms of decreasing the number of wandering animals, but it will also benefit the veterinary community because people will be more willing to spend money on the animals that do exist because there will be fewer of them and they will become more valuable. I'm very pleased that these enhancements are being proposed, and I do know that somebody in the LA area is working on submitting a statewide bill that is similar to these things, and I can't give you any details on it because I haven't been given any details. But I suggest beating the state to it and adopting these changes because it probably will happen. It's an extremely popular thing to make a spay-neuter as close to mandatory as possible. Even people who don't have animals are pretty sick and tired of all the animals wandering all over the place. And so the average person who doesn't really get into animal rights supports a spay-neuter ordinance that is very strict. We noticed that when we were doing the petition for the original ordinance that we proposed, people wanted things to be much stricter than what we were proposing, and that was quite a surprise to us. So actually, I'd like to say I hope you do give serious consideration to making these changes in as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, I have Ken Krause.
My name's Ken Krause. I'm a Oakdale livestock producer. I have a question. Are working dogs still exempt? Will they still be exempt from the update?
Well, I have not got into that level of detail with the working dog issue, and I haven't had the opportunity to talk to the Farm Bureau or, you know, folks like yourself regarding that. This is more of a general approach situation. It's certainly something that can be considered. Specifically, I address the show dogs and cats primarily because of the fact of what we receive through our shelter and what we see. So working dogs certainly are an exemption at this point, and we would have to look at that individually and discuss that with the Animal Advisory Committee and get some input regarding that.
I appreciate your comments. I've had dogs as long as I've been in the cattle business, male and female dogs. I've never had a litter of pups from them. Most of your folks that are in the business, I would say that they're not in the business of raising puppies. They're in the business of raising cattle. I have male and female dogs at home, and if one comes in, when the female dog comes in, I take care of, put her up, and obviously, if she's got pups, I can't use her. So I'd just like you folks to, the board, to take that in consideration. We are responsible people, and we're responsible for our animals, so whether it be dogs, horses, cattle. So, okay. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Next, David Cerruti.
Good morning, supervisors, county staff. My name is David Cerruti. I'm chairman of the Animal Services Advisory Board. The Animal Services Advisory Board is appointed by you, the Board of Supervisors. At our regular meeting on December 1st, 2006, we were given a presentation on the pet overpopulation ordinance by Mike McFarlane, Director of Animal Services. A motion was made and unanimously approved by our board to support Mr. McFarland in further evaluation of the ordinance and seek appropriate changes deemed necessary. We believe this will ultimately save many, many tax dollars. The success of this ordinance will continue to be monitored by our board. Thank you.
Thank you. Did I miss anyone? I had read all the requests I have. Okay, this matter will be returned to the board for a motion. I would suggest to you that the most compelling advertising I've seen related to this I personally experienced, and that was a cat, very friendly cat, wandering into my yard and promptly giving birth to six kittens. And because of my wife, I had to establish a neonatal cat clinic for about 6 weeks. And we immediately took the cat and had it spayed, because I showed her, I don't know where I got it, but it was the document that said that if the six cats were female, it would extrapolate over a period of time into a very short period, into 160, 280, 920, and that we would be contributing to that if we didn't have this. It was a wonderful cat, spayed. So we did that, and we tried to get that cat, those other cats, placed. Every single volunteer organization was full. Nobody would take those cats. I finally found a place in Merced, a very wonderful group of people who are volunteers who won't allow the cat to go until it's spayed from their clinic. So I guess I saved the community a couple of hundred cats over the next few months. But I think that a lot of people don't understand that obviously was someone's neighborhood cat. No one ever came to claim it. It had no identification on it. Because it was friendly. It was not a feral cat. I kept thinking feral cats are the ones that are doing all this birthing, and it's not. It could be somebody's neighbor. So that kind of information on how many kittens produce how many cats seems to be me. When you tell people that, they're overwhelmed. And I think that kind of message has to get out, because, you know, if it wasn't someone who cared, they could take those cats and dump them somewhere or drown them or do whatever they're going to do, and that would be terrible. Because after you get acquainted with them for a while, you become attached. So that's a personal experience, I think, that you use in advertising, in the sense that they have to know the consequences of not having that cat spayed. It's almost cruelty, in the sense, in the long term.
Absolutely.
Okay. We need a motion. I give a nice speech.
I had one more comment, if I could, okay. Mr. Chairman. I would hope that when you come back with changes in the ordinance, that we would probably have to have a public hearing so the public could comment on this, and not just before you bring it back to this board, would be my suggestion. And I still have some concerns about mandatory spading and neutering of all animals except for the exemptions you've given, because I, the way I read this, and I could be wrong in the way I'm reading it, but the only recognized breeding organizations can breed these animals, which would only leave the public to buy purebred animals would be the only thing available to it. I may be wrong in my interpretation of that, but that's what it looks like. I would also suggest to the Modesto Bee that they should not allow advertising in violation of our ordinance in their newspaper unless there's a breeding permit number along with that advertisement. Besides the citizens of this county that are towing the line, we'd expect the Modesto Bee to do its part also.
Okay, thank you. We had a motion and a second. Did we vote on it? I can't remember.
No.
Okay. Did we vote? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Oh, I thought we had a motion.
Yeah, we got.
He made a motion.
I made a motion.
Did we have a second?
I'll second it.
Motion.
Or if you want to, you can be first and I can be second. Make a difference to me.
Not to me either.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're at the 9:20 a.m. public hearing.
Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board. I'm Ron Freitas, Director of Planning and Community Development. And with me this morning is Angela Freitas, who will present this item, which is a rezone application 2006-01 Americas Vehicle Storage. It's a project to rezone a 0.79 acre portion of an expired plan development to a new plan development to allow a vehicle storage yard for impounded vehicles. And with that, I'll turn it over to Angela to present the Planning Commission's recommendation to you.
Good evening, Chairman Simon and members of the board. Angela Freitas. As Director Freitas indicated, this is a storage yard for impounded vehicles. The site is located on the northeast side of Taylor Court between Taylor Road and Taylor, between Keys Road and Taylor Road in the Keys area. The site is general planned as planned development along with the other property lying between Highway 99 and the railroad track. The site is zoned plan development number 115, which is an expired PD that had originally been approved for a tire sales business, which never established on site. Surrounding uses in the area include the Woods Furniture retail sales to the south, along with the former Valley Peterbilt site, an RV boat and storage facility. And to the north, we have the Thermo King business, along with the landscape business, which has been approved that has not yet been established. Most recently, this board heard and approved a request for an RV sales facility just off to the east of the project site in question. The project before you would call for the building of a 2,400 square foot building to provide for indoor vehicle storage and office space. Outdoor vehicle storage would be provided in the form of 27 striped spaces. Drainage would be handled by a catch basin and an underground horizontal drain. The project will be served by a private well and on-site septic. Our hours of operation are to be 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and there's an expectation of 1 to 2 truck deliveries per day to the site. The applicant has proposed landscaping consistent with the region-wide beautification efforts along Highway 99 and to screen on-site storage from both 99 and Taylor Court. Landscaping will consist of trees, shrubs, and ground covers proposed along the entire perimeter of the site. The perimeter of the site will also incorporate a 6-foot chain link fence with evergreen vines. Trees to be planted on-site will include Chinese pistachio, coast redwood, Raymond ash, and magnolias to be planted in 24-inch box size. The shrubs will be Japanese honeysuckle, dwarf mock orange, Indian hawthorn, New Zealand flax in a 1 to 5 gallon size. Ground covers will consist of Asian jasmine and turf. This item was heard by the Planning Commission on November 2nd. At the hearing, there was no one in opposition. No one spoke in opposition to the project. Commissioners did ask about the coordination of landscaping of this site with the project just recently approved to the east. The development standards do require a final landscape plan to be approved by the planning director, and staff can look at coordinating those landscape plans provided they remain consistent with the landscape plans that have been approved by the board and reviewed by the commission. The original staff report also indicated that there were to be no car sales from this facility. At the meeting, it was noted by the applicant that they did need to have some sales. It comes from the need for on-site lien sales. However, they do not need any advertisement. In your board report, we're proposing a modification to development standard number 5 to address the vehicle sales, and it is proposed to read no cars except the impounded cars being held on site and past their lien time may be sold from this project site. In addition, there will be no dealership license approved for the project location and no off-site advertising of vehicle sales. This would limit it so you wouldn't end up with a used car dealership out there. Also, originally the application had been submitted to us and had reflected at the Planning Commission as being for repossessed cars. In response to some concerns that had been raised by one of the commissioners, the applicant clarified that it is not repossessed vehicles that will be here. It is impounded vehicles and impounded vehicles only that will be on site. The Planning Commission voted unanimously on a 9-0 vote to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve this request. Following the Planning Commission meeting, staff did receive one call from a landowner to the south of this site who was concerned with people and crime that they feel this use could bring to the area. With that, again, the Planning Commission voted 9-0 to recommend approval. If there are any questions, staff would be glad to address them at this time.
Supervisor O'Brien.
I, too, received that call from a landowner concerned about the crime rate in the area and wondering what this is going to bring in addition. Will the people who've had their cars impounded be coming to the site to claim the vehicle?
My understanding is, yes, the applicant is here in the audience this morning, and it may be more appropriate for him to answer that question.
Okay, and I'll ask him that in just one second. Looking at the site plan, you noted that there'll be truck deliveries of vehicles. How are trucks going to get in and out?
Access will be from Taylor Court, here where the arrow is being shown, and the project has been reviewed to ensure that there is enough turnaround area on site so that they can...
Okay, so there is enough truck turnaround?
Yes.
Okay, and you noted that there's space for 27 vehicles, so they'll be capped at 27 vehicles?
The permit caps them at 27 striped, plus what they can fit in the building itself.
Okay, so they're allowed to store vehicles inside the building.
Correct.
As well as 27 outside?
Yes.
Okay. I do have questions for the applicant.
Thank you for taking the time. My name is Art Enriquez. I'm the applicant.
Okay.
Anything I can answer for you, I'd be more than happy
to
do so.
Yeah, just the question of whether or not the people whose car's been impounded,
this
are they...
Excuse me just a minute, Bill.
I'm sorry.
We haven't closed the public hearing yet, and we need to do that for you to come up and testify.
Sure. Okay.
And we will just shortly.
Okay.
No other questions of staff at this time.
Are there any other questions of staff at this time?
Yeah, so there's a limit. There's going to be a limit of how many cars are going to be there.
Correct. To outside space, the way the permit reads, the way the application reads, it will be 27 cars stored outside, plus what they can fit in the building. They're proposing a 2,400 square foot building, which will have an office space within it.
Okay. So then the landscaping will go in first?
The landscaping will need to be...
Wait a minute. So many times we approve these things and everything gets there, but before the landscaping gets there. So what I'm asking today is, will the landscaping be in place? Will everything be in place so that at some point it will kind of halfway hide what we're trying to do here?
Development standard number 10 requires landscaping shall be installed prior to the operation of the business.
Okay.
That's on page 15 of your report, Exhibit C.
Okay. Now, there's going to be a limit how many cars are going to be there. Now, who's going to monitor that? I mean, if I'm not wrong, once we approve these projects, who's going to go out there and say that there's a certain amount of cars? Who's going to do that?
There is no regular monitoring by staff. If there becomes a problem, then staff will be out there counting cars. But generally, we don't go out and regularly count cars.
I know. Generally, we don't do that. Okay. So when we put something like this into an application, then who's going to know whether you got 27 or you got 57 or you got 357?
You're correct. The idea is that by requiring that the parking spaces be striped and that there be only 27 striped parking spaces out there, that it will make it easier to, if the need arises where we need to go out there, that we can easily tell if they are exceeding their maximum.
Okay. We don't want this to become like a feral cat, where they all of a sudden they just continue to grow.
Staff
right.
Also desires the same thing.
Right.
We were concerned, given the nature of the use, that
I
it would maintain the appearance.
Right.
Any other questions of staff? If not, then you can return to the podium, and we'll take your testimony as requested by Supervisor O'Brien.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Just a couple questions. One, will the owners of these cars be coming to your location to claim their vehicle?
Yes. As a storage facility, we hold the registered owner of the vehicle fiscally responsible for any tow and storage costs that they accumulate while they're in our possession. So, yes,
okay.
To answer the question,
so
they will be coming to claim the vehicle.
Okay.
Should they not, the vehicle will be sold through lien sale, and they will be sent. Should that sale not satisfy the bill during the tenure of the car in our possession, the bill will be sent to the registered owner under a collection service and or court action or whatever is necessary to enforce
okay.
it.
And are you happy with the 27 vehicle outdoor space limitation that there is on it?
We don't. I currently do business in Modesto, so I'd just like to sort of add that I'm not new at this, and we have a good understanding of how to keep crime down. In fact, I think we've only had, in the last 4 years, two instances that caused us to serve the Highway Patrol in the most expeditious manner that they can get service, being close to Highway 99, the sheriff's office, the local police agencies, things like that.
But obviously, it's got to be profitable for you to do it, and they're wanting to do it.
The numbers that we have for what our fixed costs will be are low enough to where it seems to be a pretty win-win situation for us.
And that was my other concern, is the break-ins. I would assume that people's cars, when they're impounded, kind of want them back. But you have
there is a potential for that. And, you know, like I said, we've been doing this for some time. In our location here in Modesto, we have very little problems. We have surveillance systems. We have dogs in our yard.
Okay. So you have security measures in place to prevent crime.
We have a great deal of security measures, more so than probably 90% of our competitors.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Supervisor DeMartini.
The building that you're putting up, are you planning to put the higher value cars inside of that?
That's the premise, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So how many cars will fit inside
that building? That should accept comfortably about 6 to 7 cars.
I see. And those will be just cars of over $4,000 or
generally speaking, or vehicles that we feel are more subject. In some instances, law enforcement does request us to store a vehicle inside. The vehicle may have been part of a crime where the police agency needs to come and inspect that vehicle. And so to limit the possibility of the crime scene, if you will, being contaminated, they'll need to come and inspect it, and they don't want it exposed to moisture, potential break-ins and things like that, so they'll ask us to keep it inside. It's very rare, but it does happen on occasion.
I see. Yeah. I noticed that they mentioned that you not to sell cars there. Of course, you can, if the owner doesn't claim the car, then you do sell it. But
yes.
How do you go about selling it when you can't advertise the vehicle?
We're required by law. The reason I asked everybody involved to amend that is because that request contradicted the vehicle code, and so I asked that if they could take that into consideration and make the amendment. The law requires us to post a notice of pending lien sale in our office, and it's basically a piece of paper with all the vehicles that are in our possession listed and when they would be sold. So that is the only advertisement that's required, and that's the only kind that we're interested in doing. We like to avoid having a lot of traffic and things like that at our facilities. It's one of the ways that we deter theft and things like that. So.